Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Really excited for this next interview because we are talking into diet and what to do to start developing the best diet, nutrition, and eating behaviors that will be the healthiest for your body and for your mind. We have Lisa Moskovitz, who's a registered dietitian and CEO of New York Nutrition Group, a large nutrition practice in New York, and the author of The Core 3 Healthy Eating Plan, a personalized science-based guide to finding your healthiest, happiest weight. She received a BS in nutrition from Syracuse University and then went on to complete an intensive dietetic internship at New York Presbyterian Hospital. Since then, she has accumulated over a decade of experience in private practice, providing nutrition workshops and working with the media. Lisa is regularly featured in major publications such as Well and Good, Eat This, Not That, Yahoo Health, and is often interviewed for popular news channels such as Fox 5 New York, CBS News, and Inside Edition. Lisa is a diet-neutral dietitian. She believes weight loss diets can be helpful for some and harmful for others. Her approach is not diet-centered, it's client-centered. She believes that when it comes to nutrition, there is no one-size-fits-all method, and that personalization is paramount for sustainability and success. This conversation really gets to the center of decluttering the noise that surrounds diet culture in popular media channels and also really developing sustainable long-term habits. So I love this upcoming interview with Lisa because we dive deep into diet and how we reconceptualize and reframe diet to make sure that weight loss is sustainable. But one important component of everyone's diet should be hydration and making sure we're staying hydrated not only by drinking water, but making sure we get in the electrolytes that we excrete throughout the day just by sweating and moving about our day. Jen and I have been using Element as our electrolyte mix of choice every single day for the past few months, and we absolutely love it. Their combination of sodium, potassium, and magnesium is crucial to so many aspects of our cellular health, keeping energized, making sure we have smooth muscle contractions, avoiding mental fog, sleeping well, making sure that we have good bowel movements. They support us in so many different ways, so we want to always make sure that we're getting in the proper electrolytes to rehydrate our body. If you want to try out Element right now with the link down in the show notes, you get a free sample pack with every single order. So you can go to the link down in the show notes or go to drinkelement.com/optimal to get that free sample pack and start making sure you get hydrated and getting your electrolytes in today.
Lisa, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today. I'm really excited about, just taking diet out of dietitian. I love your little tagline even on Instagram. I think that's super cool. And there's a lot to dive into on this topic and a lot that I think we in general struggle with because of all of the things that are out in the world, which is great, but also a little overwhelming. So excited to kind of break it down with you today. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you guys. And I appreciate that because I do think there's so many stereotypes and misconceptions around dietitians and what we do. So I'm always happy to explain that and give people a better sense of how we can help them and what we can do for them in their lives.
Yeah. And I mean, kind of building off what Jen just said there, I think in this age of immediate and constant information, it's great because you have the ability to find information on anything that you might be looking for. But then it's also a challenge because there's all sorts of information out there and information that competes and, you know, is kind of on the opposite side of the argument from one another. So you get a lot of conflicting information, and this can also bring a really challenge and a really big challenge into the fold for providers, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, like yourself, a dietitian, or us physical therapists. You have people coming in with all these preconceived notions as to,
oh my gosh,
you know, what the best diet is, or information they got online that they think, you know, they have resonated with and they think is correct, and being able to work within that. So, I want to kind of talk about how we can combat this diet culture that has been built online, and this popularized diet culture that is getting thrown in everyone's face who's looking for information, especially if you're doing it through social platforms. So how do you start, when you work with somebody, educating and combating all of this popularized, you know, information that's out there?
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm happy you brought that up too, because it is so confused. It's a double-edged sword, because you can get a lot of really good information. It's mm-hmm. a blessing and a curse. There's so many ways that we can learn and get motivation, inspiration, pick up easy tips. But at the same time, it adds to a lot of the noise that's already out there in our minds about what to eat and what not to eat. And this is the best way to do it. And this is the best. And if you look at what I eat in a day, you could look like me. And so it is so much more overwhelming than ever. And I found, because I've been doing this for close to 15 years, and I found that it's changed. People come in and they're more overwhelmed, more confused than ever. And when you mentioned diet culture, that in itself has become this whole other polarizing concept, where now people are aware of diet culture, they're aware of the dangers, they're aware of the red flags, but it feels like the only alternative to that is to be anti-diet and, you know, ditch wanting to lose weight and accept your body and not try to do anything to change your body. And in a way, it's like another set of rules and ideas and beliefs, and people are feeling bad. Like damned if they do and damned if they don't. And they're feeling bad for wanting to go on a diet, and they're feeling bad for not feeling like they fit into the mold of what's... So it's definitely overwhelming. It's confusing. And when people come in, a lot of times, just like you mentioned, they're coming in with all of these ideas. And I heard about this. And what do you think about that? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still to date, the two biggest questions I get are about intermittent fasting and keto, surprisingly. Mm. Like, it's still, they're still going strong, and people still feel pressured to be doing these fasting diets. And there's nothing wrong with them, because it really depends on the person. Some people have success with them, but they're put these opinions. Everyone has an opinion, and it's become so dogmatic. Like, this is the way that it should be done, when they're, at the end of the day, for a lot of these claims, there is very little scientific backing. Mm. There's very little research. It's hard to snuff out what's the science and what's the snake oil. It's just become more overwhelming. And that's where a dietitian can really help somebody. And that's what I try to help somebody with, is figuring that out, quieting the noise, tapping into, okay, let's stop. Let's see, what is your body telling you? How is your body going to respond? How do you feel right now? You know, who cares what this plan is telling you to eat or not to eat or when to eat? It's like telling someone when and how much to pee. It's ridiculous. Yeah. We can't tell somebody what their body needs when they need it all the time. So it's important to try and quiet some of the noise, which is definitely, I'm making it sound easier than it is. It's really not that easy. And tap into some of the internal cues and the messages and that awareness about your own body. So that's kind of what I help people with. And at least that's where we try to start, is where are you coming to me with a set of ideas and beliefs? Let's try to sort through that first and then figure out where to go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so incredibly huge, to be able to just start to peel back those layers and really identify, you know, where is that actually coming from, and what does that mean and look like in your body? But I think something that also got kind of popularized was intuitive eating, and what does that actually mean? Because with all the noise outside, how do you actually start listening to internal cues?
Oh yeah. And it can feel like a foreign language. And for some people, it can be impossible. And for people with eating disorders, their intuition is going to tell them not to eat. So really, intuitive eating is not appropriate if you have an active eating disorder, and potentially if you've just recovered from one. So that's the big myth and misconception. And there are plenty around intuitive eating. At the same time, intuitive eating is not, let me eat whatever I want for any reason. It's not eating with abandon and no cause. It's listening to your body and letting your body guide you, tapping into those and respecting and honoring those hunger and fullness cues. But that's a skill. And the issue is that if you've been on diets throughout your life, if you tried to lose weight, if you've been told you have to lose weight, if you've been told by even a doctor, even a dietitian, that what you're doing, or you've been made to feel like what you're doing is wrong, the weight you're at is wrong, the food you're eating isn't good, that can slowly start to chip away at that trust. You start to lose that faith that you can figure it out, because people are telling you that you're obviously like not figuring it out. You're not doing it the right way because you don't fit into the BMI chart, which we know is problematic in a whole other topic in itself. And so people start to lose that trust, and that intuitive eating, which isn't just listening to your body, by the way, it's a whole world, and there's like 10 principles, and it's really interesting and something I think everyone should be familiar with. But that intuitive eating, listening to your body, can become, you know, almost impossible for some people. It could be really, really difficult. Sometimes your body isn't even ready to connect. It's not ready to connect if you've been through trauma in your life. That can make it even harder. So intuitive eating is great, but I also think it's a privilege. And I think for some people, it's a luxury, because it's not something that everyone can do for various reasons, whether it's a medical history, whether they just don't have access to unlimited food and all the food that their body wants, whether they have issues with connecting to their body and trauma and mental health issues. So there's so many things that can make it difficult. And I just think that's important to know for anyone out there who is trying to get into it and feeling almost like, you know, why isn't this working? Or a lot of people will say, I tried it and I just gained a ton of weight. Mm-hmm. And now I want to go back to the diet. And so we have to look at, well, look, did you gain weight because you were really listening to your body? Or did you gain weight because you had stopped dieting and you kind of went in the opposite direction? And now the next step is to keep going. Don't go back to where you came from. You know, the diet is what started these issues to begin with. So you've already made it this far. You have to keep going, as hard as it is to feel comfortable in the body you're in right now. And I'm not saying everyone gains weight from intuitive eating, but there's a large percent of the population that struggle with that, that come to me and say, I've been trying to just like put away the diet books and, you know, unfollow the accounts that tell me, you know, to stop eating this and that. Mm-hmm. And but I just find that now I feel worse than ever. My clothes don't fit. My cholesterol's up. My blood sugar's up. My skin is breaking out. And that's really hard for a lot of people. But I always want to say, well, look, like, first of all, we don't know that you've like, that's it. You've accomplished intuitive eating. You're doing it. We don't know that, because it's a journey, and it takes a lot of time. And it's also okay to have a structured plan. It's okay to have a little bit of a plan, like the training wheels, like some guardrails, while you're working on listening to your body. I actually believe that that could be very helpful. We don't have to be, it doesn't have to be one or the other. So I do think that you can have that happy medium of following some kind of structure without it being restrictive or too like diety. I know that's not really a word, but I'm going to use it. and, you know, but at the same time, working on listening to your body and strengthening that skill, because that's what it is. It's a skill you have to kind of relearn, because we're all born with it, but over time we lose it.
And I think that's the point that so many people like need to cue in on, is that it is a skill. And I like how you point out that it can be structured, you know, and doing this intuitive eating thing, it really in the beginning should be structured, because anytime you're trying to learn a new skill, whether that be a movement or an art or something like that, you need to practice, and you need to practice with some sort of structure. And I remember when I was coming out of being a college athlete, where my energy demands changed drastically and I needed to kind of change up how I was fueling my body, what I was putting in, I would say I kind of, you know, went about discovering this intuitive eating practice through a lot of structure and through a lot of experimenting with what I was going to eat on a certain week or for a couple weeks, and then kind of reflecting back on how that made me feel and made my body feel. And that's where I think my brain really started to make the connections between, oh, I feel great when I eat these. I really enjoy these. I maybe don't feel as great when I eat these types of foods. And that's when you start developing that skill, yes, like you talked about. And do you have any other specific structure, whether it be food journaling or, you know, yes, creating some sort of, you know, process of how people know what they're going to eat and then reflect on what, how they feel based on that?
Yes, absolutely. And you just literally said one of my favorite recommendations. And I know some people, their eyes roll in the back of their head whenever I mention journaling, because people think of it as like, yeah, either this very militant tracking of the calories, like in a way it can get obsessive. And that's fine for some people. Actually, they do feel like the tracking the food and the calories and the MyFitnessPals and the chronometers and the Lose Its, that it helps them. And that's okay. I still don't recommend that as a long-term approach, but journaling is a little different. Journaling is writing down. It's more free thought, at least what I consider journaling. So I loved, it's free, it's easy, and it can bring so much awareness. Just like you mentioned, you can identify how your body's reacting to something. So it's very different than saying, look, I was told by Dr. So-and-so on this podcast not to eat after 6 o'clock. And so I can't eat after 6 o'clock, versus I know that when I eat right before bed, I don't sleep well. I wake up, my acid reflux is out of control. I'm tired. I'm moody. That's very different. If you are specifically knowingly, like you're aware of that and you know that you react to something like that, it's okay to then go on and say, I know I do better not eating after a certain point. And so I'm going to try to follow that because I know my body benefits and performs better when I do this, this, and that. So there's a very big difference between these food, blanket food rules and fear mongering messages that we get versus this internal eating awareness that, that where we can say, I know my body benefits from that. And the journaling can really help bring that out because it's impossible to remember everything we do and how we feel and why we're doing it. And there's so many times when a client comes into my office and always part of that initial appointment, that intake is going over, what are you eating? I want to know what, you know, we're here to talk about food, although a lot of times it's not about the food, but we have to eventually talk about the food. Sometimes I call myself a food therapist because there's a lot of emotions and psychological things as well. But we get to the food part and I said, tell me what you eat in a day. And they'll tell me, and a lot, and not always, but there's many times where I'll literally say, you seem like you're eating pretty balanced and you have all the food groups. It seems pretty structured. You have 3 meals, 2 snacks. What do you think the issue is? And they'll say, well, you know, either I don't know, that's why I'm here. And I'm like, okay, fair enough, fair point. Or like, it's not like this every day. There might be the weekends are different. Okay, let's do some journaling. We'll come back, we'll regroup, we'll look at it together. And many, many times the journaling is completely different than what they thought they ate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's totally different because we just aren't able to hone in on every single thing that we do in a day. If you think about how many times that you think about food, that you make food choices, there's a behavioral psychologist, I'm forgetting his name, I'm so sorry, but he has this book and this whole, I read this article by him and he said that we make around 260 food decisions or around 260 food decisions per day. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of choices. That's a lot of thoughts around food. So it's impossible with all of the other things that we have to do in a day, because our job is not just to pay attention to our eating. I wish it was, but it's not. To be able to really have that self-awareness. So journaling is such a great tool to kind of to bring that out. And then that acts as like the foundation and the data that we need to say, okay, look, you're not having enough protein. You skip breakfast most days of the week. Maybe that's why you're eating all night long. You're only actually eating 500 calories before dinner. That's why your dinners are so much bigger than you want them to be. So I joke to some people and say, you know, I'm a dietitian and my specialty is telling people to eat more for the first half of the day because so many people realize that they just starve themselves during the day, whether it's stress or they're not hungry or they're just used to it. They're just like, it's like a habit of, I don't take breaks during the day. I don't want to eat a lunch. I'm going to fall asleep at my desk. And, you know, so there's a lot of reasons behind it, but I love that you mentioned journaling because I could talk obviously all day about it, as you could see.
Well, yeah. I love that. And I think especially where you are in the city in New York, you know, you do encounter so many more people who are just running through the day,
yes,
not thinking about it. I think that's so common. And I mean, you don't have to be in New York City, right? You could have a lot of kids, you could have a busy job, you could have so many other things coming on. And then like, I can think back to family members who say, well, I've been told intermittent fasting. So, you know, I don't eat in the morning, and then I go to work and I do my day, and then my lunch kind of gets passed by, and then I'm not eating till 2 or 3. And I'm like, well, probably an issue, right? So, you know, it's yep, starting to, I love the aspect of starting to become aware. Awareness is everything, and starting to actually see what we're looking at and see what, how our body is responding, I think is everything. But I think a lot of people fall into the diet category because there's this want to lose yeah, weight. And even though, yes, you know, you don't want to fall into diet culture, you still know and are conscious that you want to lose weight. So how can someone start to go about that in a more sustainable way?
For sure. And so the first thing I would look at, and again, the journaling can be helpful with this too, but it's not always necessary, is where are the extras happening? Are there extras? Is there mindless eating? Is there stress eating? Is there emotional eating? What's happening after the lights go down? What's happening when you're by yourself on the weekends? Because for a lot of people, the weekend might seem like a small fraction, but if you think about it, it's Friday to Sunday night. That's almost half the week. And a lot of the reason why people might struggle more on the weekend is because of what they're eating during the week. It might be because they're restricting more. So that's always the first thing, is let's look at where the extras are coming from. We don't need to be, you know, picky and, you know, you focus on like the creamer in your coffee and the little bit of sugar in your protein bar or the salad dressing that you're putting on your salad. Those are things that, you know, people can nitpick over and go, is it that? Is it this? Is that? And I say, you know what? It could be, but if that's the reason that you're not losing weight, that might not be, you. Maybe your body doesn't want to lose weight. Maybe this isn't healthy for you, and how sustainable will it be? So I always try to find the issues that must be addressed no matter what, that relate to somebody's relationship with food, like stress eating, emotional eating, mindless eating, and start there. But having that plan and saying, okay, look, whatever you're doing, right? We want to try to create new habits and behaviors. That's really it. And you could weigh yourself and look at the numbers and this and that, but the numbers, looking at the numbers all day long and the scale and the body fat, they're helpful, but they're not going to make anything. They're not going to move the needle. You're not going to make any changes unless you're focused on the things that you actually have to do, like your habits and behaviors. So that's where the work has to be. So having a plan with a little bit of structure, and the reality of the situation is everybody's very different. And I know, you know, we hate hearing that it has to be personalized, but it really does, because some people, they will do better with eating a higher protein and a higher fat diet. They might have underlying insulin resistance and a family history of diabetes or hormonal imbalance like PCOS, or, you know, they might just say, I know when I eat carbs, I feel hungrier and I crave more carbs. And then there's people who, if they don't have enough carbs, they start craving sugar like crazy. They have no energy. They don't want to go to the gym. And so for them, it's better for them to have a certain amount of carbs in their day so that they can function at their best. And then that will set them up for success, for even weight loss success. So we'd have to figure out where that sweet spot is. I do have a formula, and this is part of the book that I wrote, the Core 3 Healthy Eating Plan, where I give people this sort of formula that they can use to figure out how many servings of carbs, how many servings of protein, how many servings of fat every day do mm-hmm. do I need to aim for? Because those are where all of our calories are coming from. At the end of the day, it's either a carb, a protein, or a fat. And there's mm-hmm. certain foods that I categorize as carbs, or certain foods I categorize as fat and protein and so on. So we figure out, like, having that portion awareness and then figuring out how, what to aim for, how many a day. So I will, we'll start off with a plan where we maybe just portion out carbs. We start with just portioning out carbs. So whether they're having maybe 3 servings a day, 4 servings, 5, 6, 7, depending on activity level, depending on your goals, depending on your size, starting off. We'll figure it out that way. We'll tailor it to meet your needs. And then the rest is going to be protein, vegetables, and anti-inflammatory fats, and eat that more freely, practice the food freedom, practice the intuitive eating, but we just kind of focus more on the carbs. So that's an idea of a structured plan that I might start somebody off with. So it kind of gives them, again, a little bit of that structure, but it's not super strict. It incorporates that flexibility, and it still allows them to practice that skill that we mentioned of listening to your body, identifying hunger and fullness cues, identifying how your body responds to certain things and doesn't. So that might be an idea of where I'll start somebody off. And then we might go bring back in the journaling to see how they're responding to that. And then everything else is, I believe, all in behavior modification. You know, what are you doing to set yourself up? We might talk about the scale, you know, because people get obsessed with that 10 by 10 little piece of glass on their bathroom floor. People just get obsessed with the numbers. They have to weigh themselves every day. And I find that when people get so obsessed with the number, it can actually affect their motivation. They can get discouraged then, because the weight's going to fluctuate all of the time. Your body is an average of 60% water. So you see the scale go up a pound and it can't possibly be all fat, because your body is, we know that just your total weight is 60% water off the bat. So understanding that the numbers do lie, that you can't always take it for face value, and there are other ways to track progress. And no, progress isn't linear. We know that. We know it's about progress, not perfection, yada, yada. But just understanding, like, we have to also be thinking about these scale-free successes. What are some things that you're noticing are getting better that have nothing to do with the total poundage or the way you're, maybe it is the way your clothes are fitting you, because sometimes you can lose inches and your clothes are fitting better. The scale isn't moving. And that's still a sign that progress is happening. But a lot of times you're going to feel it before you see it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's hard for people, because they want that reward, right? They want that, like, I'm doing all this work. I want to step on the scale and I want to be able to, you know, cash in and see the results right away. But it just doesn't work that way. And that could be some of the people's biggest downfall, is when they rely so much on that scale for feedback.
No, I think so much of what you said right there was great. I love the other tip of how you might start someone just out on being more structured within the carbs and the different carbs they're going to eat, but then having some more freedom within the, you know, the extra plants, proteins, and healthy fats that they add in. And, you know, I like how you kind of then started talking more towards the scale or how someone's clothes fits, because I think I was scrolling through your Instagram, which everyone should go actually check you out at Lisa M Nutrition on Instagram. You have so much great quick content on there. And one of the ones that caught my eye is that, you know, it's okay to want to be skinny, you know, because going back to the conversation that you kind of started earlier is, you know, we always want to divide ourselves into two groups. And one of them is this, you know, much more rigid, strict diet culture. You can't eat these things. You can't eat these things. And the other is, you know, the body acceptance, you know, free flowing, do what you want as long as you feel good and feel happy. And that's just not the reality. Like, so few people land in either of those camps that are seeming to become more and more extreme. And it seems like we can't say these days that I want to be skinny, because that's you know, seen as vain or seen as, like, you know, do you really love the process of getting there? So how can somebody have the goal of getting skinny in a healthy way that doesn't, you know, change or be destructive to our body image?
Right. Yes, absolutely. It is okay to, you can want whatever you want. No one can change that. We're not going to destroy diet culture in a day. It's still here. It's here to stay. I really don't think it's going anywhere, because the diet industry is a $1 billion industry. So there's there is obviously people out there who are still buying into it. And a lot of it is because, yes, we could blame it on the messaging and how people are made to believe that you could change your body. And if you want to be skinny, you can. And if you want this, you could have it. And skinny is beautiful and successful and blah, 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 blah. You know, so we're constantly bombarded with these messages, which is very problematic and definitely something that needs to be discussed. But it's not going anywhere. Runway models are probably always going to look the way they're going to look, which is very unattainable for most of us. And that's just how it is. And that comparison is so common. It's really hard not to look at ourselves and look at other people. And with social media, it makes it even worse because now we have it in our phones all the time. And people filter and they fake it up. And then we still think it's real. And then we feel worse. So it's this whole thing. But what I want to say is, if you're not happy with the way you look, you deserve to work on that. You deserve to get to the place where you feel good and confident and happy with the skin that you're in. You deserve that. It's your right. And everyone should be able to feel that way. That not everyone does. And there's many reasons for that. But that desire to lose weight, to be thin, to do whatever, to look a different way, it can't come above the priority of your mental health and your mm-hmm. physical health. So yeah. If you're prioritizing physical appearance over mental health and physical health, that's where we draw the line. That's where we have to say, nope, stop. You know, it's gone too far. It's not going to happen. The hardest thing sometimes could be accepting that you're not, maybe you're never going to be the size that you think you're supposed to be, or the size that someone else is, or even the size that you were at one point. So many people will compare themselves to the weight they were on their wedding day, or the weight that they were when they had like the 3-week stomach flu and they were like, you know, and it's just not realistic. A lot of these times in our life, the lowest weight you've ever weighed may not be the healthiest weight you could ever be. And that could be really hard to accept because you've tasted it. You know what that feels like. You remember being there. You remember how it was getting dressed. And it's hard to let that go, you know, but sometimes you do have to mourn that. And sometimes you have to connect and say, look, that lowest weight, was I really happy? Was I the best I could be? And, you know, or was I anxious all the time? Was I moody? Was I restricting my food and having no energy and not sleeping well? Was I at that weight because I was depressed or strung out? You know, so trying to connect that maybe that lowest weight you ever weighed, maybe it made your life a little easier when you got dressed in the morning, but think about all the other times in the day that you, how you felt and really question, was that, maybe you say yes, maybe you say, yep, nope, I know, I was like the best, I was the happiest. And okay, fine. But also if you have to restrict to a certain extent and you can't go out to eat and you can't go on vacation and you have to be at the gym every day, even, you know, through injuries and sickness in order to keep that weight where it is, that cannot be your healthiest weight. That mm-hmm. can't be it. There's just no way. And that might be a hard reality to face, but it's something that is actually can be so freeing when you can accept like, this might be my body and this might be what I'm working with. You have to start being happy right now. And that could be the best thing that you can do. So knowing that you can't change your body, knowing that you might be around the weight that you're meant to be, because there's also something called set point theory, where we know that our weight does tend to lean to the place that our DNA tells us that we're meant to be, that weight that our body is sort of it's a predetermined weight in a little bit. Not that you can't ever get past it, but it can be very hard. So acknowledging that can be very freeing, because now you have all of this freed up mental space and energy to focus on other things in your life that matter, and to eat healthy and exercise just to be healthy, instead of to lose weight, mm-hmm. can be incredibly freeing. So there are definitely people who can lose weight, who can get down to the lowest weight they've ever been and can do it in a healthy and sustainable way. But there's also people that can't. And that's just the reality. And it's hard because when I'm working with people one-on-one, sometimes we do get to that point where I have to tell someone, look, we've been trying this. We've tried all these different ways. It's clear the only way we're going to see change is if you go back to that super strict diet that you did, which is what brought you here to begin with, because you knew that wasn't healthy and sustainable. And it actually contributed maybe to disordered eating and food fears and all those other things. So, you know, maybe we're at the place where we need to start focusing on body image, and we need to start working more on you feeling good, and maybe working more on body composition. You know, maybe we just focus on building muscle and losing body fat instead of just like, how low can I go with the scale?
That's so incredibly important to remember. And like, even myself, I mean, you mentioned, you know, getting to your your wedding weight. Like I did have a specific goal. I took 5 months to get there. So I did it in a sustainable way, but I did, you know, go to events where I was like, nope, not going to touch that, not going to eat that. You know, like I did have really strict boundaries upon my eating and what I was choosing to put in my body.
Things you probably wouldn't want to do for the rest of your life.
100% no. It was for me, like that was my goal to have that image of my body for that snapshot in time, but I knew that was not going to be sustainable and it's not something I'm going to work back toward, you know, in my life. Like it just, that was the time period, that was my goal in the moment, and then now here I am living my life, you know, and it is, but I can see where it's like I did feel that, I did look at, I can see back at those images, you know, but it's not sustainable for the life that I want to live and that I choose to be in, and I think that's what's hard is this idea of, you know, that losing the weight is going to improve my body image and I'm going to love myself, you know, like how do we start, how do we reframe that?
Yeah. Losing weight won't automatically improve your body image. I'm just going to say that now. People think, oh, but once I lose these 20 pounds, I'll be happier. I won't care about what people think. I'll go out. I'll be able to wear this. I'll be able to do that. I won't think about that. It's like, no, actually, you're going to be worrying about that more because now you're going to be afraid of gaining the weight back.
Yeah.
Once you taste it, now it's like, oh, I have to be really careful. If you go up a pound, oh no, I can never go back to that place that I was. So it almost can make things even worse in the long run. But, you know, like you said, too, with the if there's an occasion, there's still nothing wrong. And I have to always add this in because I don't think there, you know, there is nothing wrong that I don't think I know there's nothing wrong with wanting to lose weight for your wedding when, you know, there's cameras everywhere and you're going to be in a dress and there's eyeballs everywhere. And these pictures are going to be with you for the rest of your life. And hopefully this is the only time you're going to do it. So hopefully these are like pictures. So like all of those things, you know, it's okay. You know, like you want to feel good. That's okay. It's okay to say also at the same time that I don't feel good with what I feel fat. I don't like the way my clothes are fitting. I feel soft. I feel like I have a muffin top or this. It's okay to say that. We want to be careful in front of kids and things like that and younger minds and, you know, how that, you know, what message that sends them. But it's okay to feel, to say that in your own world and feel that way. I don't think this whole, and I love the concept of body positivity. I do. I think it's so helpful for so many people and not, you know, not saying that you can only feel good about yourself if you weigh this or you look like that. But I think there's also people out there that struggle with that concept because in a way it's like, it could be that toxic positivity of like, I shouldn't feel bad about myself. I'm supposed to be happy. I'm supposed to be this. And I, you know, almost like you could feel bad about feeling bad because we're told like, okay, you should be happy with, or if you say like, oh, but look at this person, they're in a larger body than me, I shouldn't be wanting to lose weight because look at that. So there's like all of these things out there, but I think it's okay to feel that way. I think the other important concept to understand is that body image is not what you see. It's how you feel about what you see. And think about all of the different things that could affect the way we feel. It could be a bad argument with a spouse or a partner or a friend or a coworker, or something happened at work, or, you know, some stress, something else is stressing you out in life, or you just got bad news, or all of those emotions that come at us, like sometimes a roller coaster, can kind of get bundled up and they can be taken out on the way we feel about ourselves and how we look. And a lot of people will say, look, I, you know, had a really good day yesterday. I felt good in the morning and I woke up today and I don't feel good. It's like, well, obviously your body didn't change overnight. We know there's no way. Maybe you have a little more bloat. That's very possible, depending on what you ate, but you didn't gain 10 pounds overnight. But sometimes it can feel like you gained 10 pounds overnight. And that's partially why, is because those feelings, those emotions are so sensitive and affected by all the other areas in our life, which is why I say, if you're having really bad body image, even to the point where it's dysmorphic, you look in the mirror and you see someone who's a lot larger, or you see what you're afraid of looking like, not actually what you look like. A lot of times there's a deeper rooted issue going on there. There's some self-esteem issue or trauma or mental health issues or, you know, unresolved emotions and stress, and it's being taken out on yourself, on your body image. And then, of course, if it gets really bad, it can lead to and contribute to, and it's often a part of eating disorders and disordered eating. So it can definitely become a serious mental health concern.
No, I think that that's so important, you know, talking about kind of all sides of the proverbial coin on this one, and how there are times when, you know, just this body positivity conversation can go too far, and understanding that it is okay to almost have that intuition to say, like, hey, yes, I might not be happy with what I see when I look in the mirror, but also maybe that's coming from a place where I'm understanding that I'm not being as healthy as I could, and I'm not being as healthful in my body and my choices as I possibly could. And it's okay to kind of have that admission for yourself. What was it? I think it was, you know, coming out of one of the longest stretches of quarantine, and who was it online? There was a post, I think Will Smith actually put up a post where he kind of was,
how dare you mention his name? No, I'm just
kidding. I know. Maybe a bad example to bring up after the whole debacle with Chris Rock, but
it's fine. I'm still a Will Smith fan. Right.
But listen to the example, so he was showing his body and he had clearly gained some weight, you know? And it was something where he was like, you know, holding his stomach, and he said, so grateful for this body,
that,
you know,
that got me
through quarantine. And then it showed kind of a montage of him like exercising or mixing up a shake or doing whatever. And he said, and now I'm going to show this body some gratitude by taking some care of it, or, you know, by, you know, making some great choices for my health or something like that. And I just thought it kind of framed, you know, really perfectly that whole body image conversation.
Yes.
You know, along with tagging on, hey, I'm going to make healthy decisions and make some more healthful behavior changes to respect and be grateful for my body.
Yeah, that's why I say too, focus on, no matter what, you have to focus on your habits and behaviors, you know, and you deserve to treat yourself with respect, and you deserve to take care of yourself no matter what size you are. And if you are in a larger body, that you still need food. You still need to eat every single day for the rest of your life, no matter what size you are. So there is like this almost like switching it from, what do I have to do with food? How could I control food? To, no, what is food going to do for my body? What could food do for me? Mm. What is this giving to, what is this introducing? What is this providing me right now in this moment and helping me with either my mood or my gut health or my sleep or immune system or energy? And when you think of food that way, it really can, it can really change your perspective of food and improve your relationship with food. And the other part is saying, what could I add in? Stop with the, what can I cut out? What do I have to do less of? What do I have to limit? What do I have to avoid? Change that to, what could I add in to my day to make it better and healthier? What could I add in? Do I need more protein? Do I need more fiber? Do I need more omega-3s? Do I need more fermented foods? You know, whatever it is, especially with your goals, that can instantly change the way you feel around food. It can make eating more enjoyable and less stressful, which at the end of the day is the goal.
That's one of my favorite ways to like kind of approach food. Like, what am I adding in rather than what am I taking away? You know, it just is.
Yes.
And then you naturally don't have room for some other things that you might have been adding before. But I think that's, it's just such a great mentality to, and more freeing, you know, thinking about what I'm adding in rather than what I'm taking away, and in that scarcity mindset. But I do want to ask too, you know, for someone who, say, they're in just such a busy time in their lives where they're wanting to lose weight, they're wanting to be more healthful, but yet they have a lot of kids, they have a busy job, it's just a busy season. And the only thing that really sounds convenient sometimes is just going through the drive-thru and just picking up food. And, you know, so how does someone kind of approach that time in their life with knowing where they want to get to?
Yes. Yeah. And it is hard. And I have tons of clients like that. And we really have to work hard through those experiences and talk about, okay, what happened when you were in the car and you had like two choices, and one was McDonald's and one was, you know, maybe Panera Bread or something on the side of the road. And like, why did you make a left instead of a right? You know, so sometimes we have to really play that out, because a lot of times it is the thoughts around food and that feeling of all or nothing. Okay, I already had a French fry. I might as well eat three cheeseburgers and can just like double down here. You know, so some people get into that mentality of, I already did this, I might as well keep going. But I always want to remind people, there is no good and bad decision. You didn't commit a crime. It's not like you had this and all of a sudden you're going to gain 10 pounds and there's no coming back. So that's not how it works. There's not a good or bad choice, but there is always a better choice. And there, anywhere you go, any food option you have, you could always make it a little bit more balanced, a little healthier. And then, of course, you could always be practicing that hunger and fullness and satisfaction and saying, how am I feeling with this meal? Do I need to keep eating? Does this taste good? Did I have enough? Do I, you know, because at the end of the day, it's when it comes to weight loss, and I believe in both making sure you're eating balanced, and then if you're trying to lose weight, also cutting calories, because at the end of the day, that's what you need, folks, is a calorie deficit. So even if you don't want to focus on calories, that's what it requires, even though not all calories are created equally. But trying to focus on what, you know, the portions, because if you're eating, you could be eating more calories in a beautiful, super nutritious, by the way, but like it can be very calorie dense, a salad versus like a hamburger or pizza, which aren't bad foods, but people assume that once they're eating that, they're getting loads of calories in their body and it's automatically getting stored as fat. But that's not true. You're not going to gain weight from eating pizza and burgers. It depends on how much, how often, your overall frequency and pattern. So I would say wherever you are, trying to tap into what do I want, what's available, and how could I make this healthier and more balanced? And then try to eat until you've had enough, not until you're stuffed, not until your plate is gone. And that's usually the hardest thing about this whole listening to your body, is when to stop eating, is to know when to put the fork down. That's usually the hardest thing, because so many people rely on the cues of when there's no more food on their plate, when other people stop eating, when, you know, whatever their meal plan tells them, whatever in their head they think is appropriate. But listening to your body to tell you when to stop eating is also helpful. And then the other thing that can make a huge difference is just planning. If you're in the car, if you're, you know, if you live in the city and you have a bag, you could always pack snacks with you. And trying to get snacks, and I have like this, you know, follow the guide of five, where you have at least 5 grams of fiber, 5 grams of fat, and 5 grams of protein in a snack, because that's what's going to keep your blood sugar stable. It's going to keep your energy levels up. It's going to keep appetite steady. And so that 5-5-5 rule can be really helpful with any type of snack. So even if it's like a protein bar, that's fine. It's getting the job done. It might not be the best thing in the world because it is a little processed, but it's definitely not a bad food. It's not the worst, and it can get the job done. It might be fruit and some nuts and some yogurt, but whatever it is, having these things on hand can be very helpful so that you don't let your hunger get too far or get too intense. Because once we get to the point, maybe it's like at a 7 or 8 on the hunger scale of 1 to 10, 10 being really hungry, then it's really hard to make those sensible decisions. Once we get too hungry, it's not like, okay, what could I eat and where could I go and how could, we're not going to be thinking about all that. It's going to be, I need food. I need it now. I got to get on with my day and get to something else. So by having these strategic balanced snacks, you can then set yourself up so that every time you get hungry, just a little bit hungry, you have the capacity and the bandwidth to think about how to make that more balanced. So those are a few things that you can do, but it really, you know, of course it depends on the person, but that those few things might help.
That's such a fantastic, I think that's almost a great continuation of the skill building. You know, once you've developed more of this intuition and awareness and understand the types of food that you respond well to, then we need to start the forward, you know, looking and thinking ahead and how do I plan? And, you know, even an example with Jen and I, like, we will get towards the end of the day when I should already be preparing dinner, and I haven't taken out any protein from the freezer and nothing's thawing out. Yeah. And I'm like, shoot, I could try and rapidly thaw this out, but then I don't like doing that because it doesn't cook as well.
I've totally been there with you.
You know, and you just get yourself into these holes, and then I'm just like,
yeah.
You said double down earlier, and I'm like, man, that sounds an awful like double. And then In-N-Out came into my mind because we were talking about McDonald's. And then I'll just be like, hey, what about In-N-Out tonight? And it's so much easier to make those calls when you don't just like do that minimal planning or thinking ahead or the preparation. And so I love the rule of fives, following the rule of fives. I think that's a great thing to keep in mind when you are Finding snacks.
Well, and even like coming into this podcast, we had meetings before this, so I couldn't really prepare a breakfast, and being pregnant, like I need to eat.
Like it's, yeah. Oh, she it's, needs to
it's
eat.
A more, oh, yeah. It's like a different level of hunger. And so just coming into this, I was like, all right, well, the only thing I have is a protein bar, and that's what I'm going to grab. Yeah. And it's going to help me so that I can be mentally alert for this podcast interview. And it did. It helped. Like even just having this protein bar, no, it's not the best, but it still had the protein and the fat and, you know, stuff to keep me satiated.
Killed the hanger.
Yes. Yeah, so that my mind can actually function during this podcast interview. So it's like, I love that aspect.
And it paid off, as you could tell.
Yeah, right. Hopefully. Yeah. But I love that concept of like, what are those snacks really look like? And what can we do where it's not just like a cracker, but maybe it's a cracker and, you know, a little meat and cheese or something. Like, what can we do that makes it a little bit...
Sardines.
Oh, gosh, gross.
Yes. Omega-3. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. See? There we go. Not everyone's cup of tea, I'm sure. But no, you're so right. And I think when you say protein bar, like, I'll recommend that to my clients. They're like, really? And I'm like, yes. Like, when you start to obsess over this like clean eating, which by the way, what the heck does that mean, right? But like this like need to eat clean all the time and everything has to be whole foods and fresh, you're gonna get so overwhelmed that you're just gonna be like, F it. Yeah. I can't find that. So I'm just gonna go for the candy bar. You know, that's when you make those decisions, when you're so overwhelmed by trying to be perfect all the time that you end up not eating, or you're just like, I'm just going to go for whatever's there. And that's what also can create that kind of like compulsiveness and feeling out of control. So it's having those snacks available are so important, even if they're not perfect. It's, if you could just get a little protein, a little fiber, a little fat somehow, somewhere, then you're going to be good to go. And you just try to do that as much as possible. It's not about perfection. It doesn't exist. The perfect diet doesn't exist. And when you try to achieve the perfect diet, then we're like almost getting into the category, like the territory of, is this like disordered and dysfunctional? Is this even healthy now? So mm-hmm. I think that's just so important, because people can get so, feel so pressured and wrapped up in like what's good and what's bad. And still, even with all the education out there, people still, it's hard to shake that. It's hard to shake that and not think in such binary terms. You know, people just need their like category. They need to like label foods, and we just can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's a great place to kind of wrap up all these thoughts we've been going with. And, you know, it's a skill. Developing a diet and a pattern and a behavior is a skill. And it's something that is lifelong and will continue to be something that we work on and develop. I mean, I think just thinking of a diet as a snapshot and one moment in time is a misnomer anyway, because diet is something that we do for life. And I think we talked about some incredible pointers on how to start developing that skill. And I know there's so many other things that we could have, you know, jumped into more specifics on different diets or different food groups and what they can do for your body. So maybe we'll have to have you back at some point in the future. Yes! But where can people go to start learning more from you now?
Yeah, thank you. So you could find me on social. So I'm on Instagram mostly at Lisa M Nutrition. Pretty simple and boring, but that's where you can find me. And then I have my practice, my private practice, which is NY as in New York, nutritiongroup.com. So that's nynutritiongroup.com. And we do one-on-one counseling in person and virtual. And we also take most major health insurance plans. So a lot of people can get it covered by health insurance, because I believe nutrition should be accessible and affordable for everyone.
Mm, definitely.
And I know that you have written a book, I believe.
Yeah.
I did. Yes. See, I'm terrible at self-promoting. So thank you for the plug. So yep, it's called The Core 3 Healthy Eating Plan. And it really, it kind of goes through a lot of the stuff that we talked about today, actually. And it helps people form a healthier relationship with food while simultaneously looking to, you know, maybe lose weight or just improve their eating habits, and gives them concrete behavioral modification tips as well. And you can find that on my website, and I sign the copy when you get it right from me, or you can get it on most major retailers like Amazon and Barnes and Noble and Target, all those places that we all go to all the time.
That's fantastic. And we will have all of that linked up down in the show notes. So you can go and get that autographed copy. by Lisa. And I believe, does it look like you can get a discount with code CORE20 on that?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. If you purchase through the website, you can just enter that at checkout and get 20% off.
Amazing. So if you want to continue your learning, go check out the book, check out Lisa's practice. And again, thank you so much for just taking the time to break all this down with us today.
Another great interview with Lisa, filled with so much information. If you know that this can benefit either a family member or friend, please pass the episode along. If you haven't yet, we'd really appreciate a rating and review because it just helps to get this message out to so many more people. So if you could take just a couple minutes, leave a quick rating and review, it really helps to keep this message out there and spread this podcast. Now, again, all the links for Lisa are down in the show notes, so go check them out.